Brings us to child welfare. Now, the Government of Canada will say many things publicly, but this is what they say privately about the level of funding they provide to First Nations children in child welfare care. And by the way, there are three times the number of First Nations kids in child welfare care than there ever was at the height of residential schools. The lowest, you in British Columbia, share the lowest level of First Nations child welfare funding with New Brunswick. Every other region in the country receives a higher level of child welfare funding. And the funding formula they apply in British Columbia is the one they're describing in this document behind me. They're saying circumstances are dire, and as a consequence of providing inadequate prevention, it's foreseeable that civil proceedings could be initiated against the Government of Canada as a result of abuse or neglect of children in care. There's a wonderful 2006 fact sheet that I printed off the internet, and it was authored by the Department of Indian Affairs, and it says that they acknowledge that their funding formula is outdated and it results in growing numbers of children going into child welfare care. And it also says in there that it is so bad that the agencies, First Nations agencies, can't meet their legal mandate. That's their own fact sheet. There has been two solutions developed with the government to address it, and of course we all know Sheila Fraser took a good look at this in 2008 and found it to be inequitable. So what does Canada do? Well, Canada rolls out a new approach, not the approach it developed with First Nations, a new approach they called enhanced funding. Now, back in 2005, our recent study, we recommended $109 million per annum, excluding Ontario and the territories. What the Government of Canada will routinely do is they'll say, we're providing X hundred millions of dollars to First Nations or to Métis or Inuit. What they don't do is tell you what they would do if we were non-Aboriginal people. And they also don't call any attention to whether that meets the benchmark of what their own government reports say are required. And you can see under this enhanced funding model, the Government of Canada has only provided up until today really 44%, roughly about 40% of what it said it was needed back in 2005. What it said was needed in 2005. So what do? We're a small nonprofit organization. We have four staff. At the time, we had this rundown office overlooking Scotty's Bong Shop and around the corner from High Times. We also, over my personal office, overlooked an exotic lingerie shop that had this wonderful Christmas and Halloween display. There comes a time in the life of all people. I mean, an elder gave us a very important thing when we created the Caring Society. He said, never fall in love with the Caring Society. And never fall in love with being a social worker or anything else. Fall in love with the children. Because you have to be prepared to sacrifice the organization and your profession for them. And that moment came for us when, after spending a decade at the table with Canada, it was clear to us that they were going to keep us there for another decade. But the ones that would be harmed would not be those of us sitting around that table having coffee. It'd be the children and young people back in their communities who are being wrongfully removed. And I personally would rather die on my feet than live on my knees. And so we went all in. And in February 27, 2007, we filed a human rights complaint against the Government of Canada, alleging it was racially discriminating against children by underfunding child welfare. It was at once the most proud and sad moment of my life. Proud that we were taking something and doing something on behalf of the children. I was devastated that it was actually necessary. I could not believe that that was something that we had to do. And I remember very well that day. I was inside with then National Chief Phil Fontaine, and we walked out into Parliament, out into the whole yard in front of Parliament, and some of you have seen it on Canada Day, and others have been there, and there was nobody there. The biggest court case, in my view, the biggest human rights case had just been filed of our time, and nobody was there. I still remember the echo of my footsteps as I walked down the steps apartment. And with every footstep, I wondered if there hoped that someone would be there. Well, thankfully, that's all changed, as I'm about to describe in just a few minutes. But what about the case? Well, the government of Canada is not arguing it on the merits, i.e., it's not arguing on the central question of whether it's discriminating. It says that the most important question is that there's two legal technicalities that we feel are more important. Number one, the federal government does not fund these services or provide the services. All we do is fund them, they say. Others deliver them. So it's you that's discriminating, not us. So don't hold us accountable. That's argument number one. It's called funding is not a service. If you don't buy that one, they have argument number two. Argument number two is that we only fund First Nations folks on reserve here, these kids. The provincial and territorial government funds people off reserve. You can't compare us to the provinces, that's not fair. Even when the same laws apply, even when we're talking about children. Now, Canada tried to advance those legal technicalities and derail a hearing on the merits on two occasions, and they were both defeated in federal court. On November 16, 2009, we were about to go to the hearing on the merits. On November 2nd, the federal government appointed a brand new tribunal chair. On November 6th, the conference call was called, and she, without application by any of the parties, she vacated all the hearing dates. And on the conference call, she asked Canada why they had brought a stay to the proceedings and brought on a motion to dismiss on the basis of comparator and service. Not surprisingly, Canada does so, and that is heard in June of 2010. The tribunal was to rule within 4 months and did not do so. In its own rules, to rule within 6 months at the absolute latest and did not do so. Every delay that we saw was a day in the life of a child. We felt we had to take action. So in something that I think is unprecedented in law, there's some lawyers here, they can tell me whether it's unprecedented or not. The Caring Society filed a mandamus application against the tribunal to order it to rule in federal court. The tribunal chairperson then releases the ruling, and the ruling goes in Canada's favor. She dismisses our child welfare complaint on a comparator issue. She agrees that the most important question here is whether or not you can compare two funders. And she says that can't stand. But the basic implication of her ruling is this. All services on reserve are funded by the federal government. If her ruling stood, there would be no way for First Nations citizens to address inequalities resulting from Canada's policies or funding regimes using Canadian human rights law. There'd be a virtual vacuum. And its implications would even go beyond that to non-Aboriginal Canadians. As one of our lawyers argued, and as Justice McTavish would later agree, she said, imagine if you are a landlord and a person of a specific race comes forward and wants to rent. It's the first person that you've seen wanting to rent your spot. You say, well, I'm not going to rent to you because you're of that race. And then you take the thing off the market. Under Chair Chitalia's original ruling, that would not be discrimination. Or if I had one employee in my store, and I said, you know what, I don't like your sexual preference. So you can only work in the back of the store. I don't want the public to come in contact with you. Well, there's no other employee for you to compare yourself to, so under Chair Chitalia's decision, that would not be discrimination under human rights law. We appealed that decision. And I want to put out three cheers to our Steichman Elliott law firm, who has taken this case on pro bono and represented the kids with just immaculate things. So three cheers for Nick Mahaffey and Sarah Clark. But here's where things have changed. You see, all the way through this, we've been inviting kids to come to the courtroom. And kids have been bringing other kids. And kids have been bringing more kids. And so on the hearing dates, on February 14th, we actually had so many children in the hearing rooms, we had to book them in shifts. And you imagine yourselves, you're Canada's lawyers. Let's just all imagine we're Canada's lawyers. You walk into the hearing room, and there's kindergarten kids sitting in the front row. You're about to present your case. You have five desks of lawyers. You have the Assembly of First Nations. You have the Canadian Human Rights Commission, which is different than the tribunal, arguing against Canada. You have the Caring Society. You have Amnesty International. You have the Chiefs of Ontario. You're squirreled away at one little table, and you've got a row of five-year-olds behind you. Now, what would you wonder what would five-year-olds get out of a complicated court case like this? Well, I went out during the snack time, and there was this beautiful little girl there, and she puts up her hand. And she's just finishing off her granola bar, and she's putting up her hand. And she says, I have a question. Why are they talking about everything except for the children? And then I go out, and this is when Canada was presenting its argument. So Canada had started in, and then there was a break. And there was a group of students there from grade 3. And their teacher had gone to the dollar store and got them Sherlock notebooks so they could be like reporters. That's what she told them that you do as a witness. It was kind of like being a reporter. You go in there and you take notes. So this one flagged me over. He says, Cindy, come on over here. So I go see him. And the first thing is he says, and, you know, it's right in the seating area, and then to the right is the ladies' restroom, and to the left is the men's. I was on the way to the ladies' restroom, and the first thing he wanted to tell me is, there's marble in there. This is a fancy place. So then he wanted to show me his notebook. So he says, there's a line drawn down the center of the notebook, and then he's got all these tallies. You know, you've seen them. Remember, you're counting this way, 1, 2, 3, 4, line across. Whole long list. And then on the other side is a shorter list, only about a third of the way, half of the way down the page. And so he says, do you know what this is? I said, no. He said, well, the long list is when the judge asks Canada a question, and the short list is when they answer. So I wanted to kind of bring to you the I Am a Witness campaign, because you can go onto this website where all of Canada's court documents are loaded and so are ours. I think that we all need to be accountable. I don't want you to just believe me because of what I'm saying up here. I want you to be an active witness, a good critical witness. Go and read all these reports. Read Canada's arguments. See if you agree with them. Read all of our arguments. See if you agree with us. But the most important thing is that you take the side of the children and you take the side of the country. And when Canadians have done that,